you choose to have integrity in your life, people aren't going to clap for you. Having integrity, no one's going to clap for you, but God is going to strengthen you. And I think if you, which one of those do you want? Which one of those do you want?
Welcome to the Three Creeks Church podcast. We're in a series called Chasing Wisdom, and we're looking at how to pursue a life well lived. This message is just part one of the chase for wisdom, because every week we release a part two featuring an interview with someone who has followed God for a long time. To keep up with everything happening at Three Creeks this summer, follow us on social media or click the events tab at threecreekschurch.com. And now, here's part one of this week's message.
Welcome. Hey, my name is Joel, and I get to be the pastor here at Three Creeks Church. We're in week three of Chasing Wisdom, and I'm in my natural habitat. I feel like I'm out here reminiscing a little bit and just anticipating the day that I will get to take my son Judah hunting for the first time. The Trainer family, full disclosure, we are not great hunters. My grandfather, I think he hunted deer for like 50 years, and I think he shot one. Like, that is really not very good. My dad, similar statistics. Myself, really not a very good hunter. Like, I like it. I like being in nature. I like hunting. I'm just not very good at it, if I'm being totally honest. But I can't wait to take Judah hunting, and here's why. It's because through hunting, a value in the Trainer family has been passed on from generation to generation in hunting. See, the thing about hunting is that no one else is around you, right? You're all by yourself. In fact, if you're around other people, you're not very good at hunting. You're not in the right spot. And the thing is, though, is that there's this booklet called the Ohio Hunting and Fishing Regulations Booklet, and it is chock full of laws and rules that you are supposed to follow, even though no one's watching. Like, I guess technically a game warden or a park ranger could come and find you, but at the end of the day, it's not going to happen. Like 99.999% of the time, you don't get caught. You're all by yourself. So when it comes to these hunting laws, it's like, how important is it to uphold them because no one is watching? Well, the value of doing the right thing, of having integrity, is one that has been passed on from generation to generation in the Trainer family. Like, I can remember growing up, one of the laws is that you can't shoot at a deer before 30 minutes before sunrise or after 30 minutes after sunset. Like, that, those are the hours in which you can hunt deer. And I remember as a kid, my dad not even letting me put a bullet in the chamber of my gun before that moment. And I can just remember being like, Dad, it's not a big deal. And my dad was adamant that we were gonna do the right thing. And when I would express this, like, Dad, it's not a big deal, he would tell me this story about when he was growing up, him and his brothers would go hunting. They would go hunting for rabbits. And at that point in time, you could only hunt rabbits until 1 p.m. in the day. And they would hunt all day, him and his brothers. In typical Trainer fashion, they probably didn't even see a rabbit, let alone shoot one, because we're not good hunters. But at 1 o'clock, my grandpa would have my dad and all of his brothers empty their guns, and they were just taking a walk back to the car. And if a rabbit would come across and sit there and look at him, my dad and his brothers would look at my grandpa, and my grandpa would say, "Enjoy the view, but we're gonna do the right thing." And you know, it's something that's just been passed on through from generation to generation in my family, to the point where a couple years ago, I got invited to go turkey hunting, and I got invited to go with like pros. Like, they were filming a TV show. I was the guest. I'd never been turkey hunting before. I was fired up. I was like, this is finally my chance to go hunting with somebody that knows what they're doing. So we get out there. I was, you know, in my mid-20s. I'm fired up to be with these guys. We go turkey hunting, and All morning, we just didn't have a whole lot of luck. It was a windy day. That's really bad for turkey hunting. But I'm like, I know these guys are going to pull it out. They're going to give me a chance to finally do something successful in hunting. You can only shoot a turkey until 1 p.m. in Missouri. And so at 11 o'clock, we got up from our blind. We're doing this thing called run and gun, where you try to cover as much land as you can. And we get to the edge of this field, and literally at 12:45 p.m., 500 yards away, I'm not kidding, you couldn't see the turkeys unless you had binoculars. There are two turkeys 500 yards away. And so the wind is blowing at them. My buddy calls. The turkeys hear the call, and they start humming towards us. We're sitting on the edge of this field. We're looking at each other going, no way. We're looking at our watch going, there's 15 minutes left. This is crazy. And they're coming at us, and they're going to make it. Like, it's going to happen. 100 yards away, they'd come 400 yards, 100 yards away, a group of about 20 turkeys walk into the field. And they all just start meandering about. They start eating, they start hanging out. We're still calling, they're still responding, but they're not really interested in us. They've got 20 other turkeys to hang out with. And the clock keeps ticking, and I look at my watch, and it says 1 p.m. And at that point, I just had to put my gun by my side. And one of the people that was with us, they didn't have the same value, I guess, in this way, was like, dude, it's not a big deal. Like, no one's out here. No one's watching. And I just said, I just can't do it. And these turkeys come literally 25 yards away. They're all blown up. You know, that's a weird, if you don't know what I'm talking about, that just means that a turkey like puffs out all of its feathers. I didn't blow up the turkey. It's when it puffs out all of its feathers. It's this classic turkey hunting image. And my gun was at my side. And I thought, I'm not allowed to do it. I was hesitant to tell that story because I don't want to like paint myself as the hero. The reality is that if you look closely at my life, you're going to find a lot of areas in my life that I don't do the right thing. If I've created this perception right now that you're like, wow, Joel must be a super Christian, get to know me and I will shatter that perception very quickly. There are way too many times that I'd like to admit that I don't do the right thing. On that day specifically, I had the whatever it took to just stick to what I believe was true, and I just did the right thing. Proverbs 10:9 says this, whoever walks in integrity walks securely, but whoever takes crooked paths will be found out. Whoever walks in integrity walks securely. Whoever does the right thing walks securely. If you take crooked paths, you're going to be found out. Integrity is this. I think C.S. Lewis has the best definition of it. Integrity is doing the right thing even when no one is watching. It's doing the right thing even when no one is watching. And today's big idea is this. It's never wrong to do the right thing. It's never wrong to do the right thing. That's actually one of our trainer family values. We have 10 of them. We wrote them on a board and they hang above my kitchen table. My kids can say them. They don't know what they mean yet, but they can say them. And frankly, it sounds kind of cute, right? Like when I say, hey kids, it's never wrong, and they all say, to do the right thing, it sounds great. It sounds like a good thing to instill in your kids. The reality is that it's annoying as it plays itself out in my life. Like when I'm driving down the road and I miss a turn, and I'm like, oh shoot, I gotta take a U-turn. So I get over into the turn lane and I see the sign that says U-turn like prohibited. But I'm like, I'm looking around going, I don't see any police officers, right? Like I'm not gonna get pulled over. So what's the big deal? I'm not endangering anyone's life. I get over and I turn the blinker on and it's pretty clear to Morgan that I'm gonna be doing a U-turn against the law. And she'll be like, what are you doing? And I'm like, it's just not a big deal. And she'll say, hey, it's never wrong to do the right thing. And I'm like, man, I hate that value. You know, like it is inconvenient to be a person who just wants to do the right thing. The reality is this. I'm not telling you anything that you don't know, but having integrity is going to cost you. Doing the right thing, being a person who has integrity, it is going to cost you. In some cases, it's going to cost you a little bit. That illustration I just gave you, it cost me, what, 2 minutes, 90 seconds to, rather than take a U-turn, to go straight and make a couple of turns and get back on the road that I was going to go on, what, it's not that big of a price to pay. But if you're going to be a person who lives a life of integrity, who does the right thing, it is going to cost you. Having integrity could cost you your job, right? Your boss asks you to do something illegal. They ask you to do something that isn't right, and you say, I'm not going to do it. They say they want you to cut a corner. They want you to be deceptive. You go, I'm not going to do it. That could cost you your job if you want to be the kind of person that just does the right thing. It could cost you a friendship, right? You see friends doing stuff that isn't right. You call them out. They don't like being called out. They ostracize you. They cut you off from a friend group. It could cost you a friendship, right? I mean, I could play a lot of scenarios in the area of friendship where having integrity and doing the right thing, it's going to cost you. It's going to cost you money. Having integrity is expensive, man. Like when it comes to remodeling your house and applying for house permits, it's expensive. When it comes to doing your taxes the right way, not cutting any corners ever, it's expensive. When it comes to, you know, reporting all of your income when you're being paid cash under the table, it's expensive. It costs more money to have integrity than to not have integrity. When it comes to very small things, and I know that this one's going to sting. I know it's going to sting. It stings me. When it comes to Netflix, having integrity means that we don't use somebody else's login. It's not how it was intended. You know that it's deceptive, and so do I, but we just kind of do it anyway because it's not that big of a deal. It's just $8 or $9 a month. Who cares? Having integrity, doing the right thing, is going to cost you. It's awkward, it's inconvenient, it's expensive, but it's the right thing, and it's never wrong to do the right thing. As I was writing this part of the message, I just felt this overwhelming feeling like, man, I am being so legalistic right now. Like, I am making these rules in life. Like, I feel like I'm imposing them on you, and I just feel legalistic. But as I thought about why I'm sharing this, I promise you, I'm not trying to be legalistic. Legalism only really occurs when you're trying to impress another person, right? When you're trying to, you know, follow somebody else's rules. It's about, you know, comparing yourself to a standard that a person made. With integrity, by definition, no one's watching. And so we don't live lives of integrity. We don't do the right thing to impress anybody, to follow a certain number of Christian rules. That's not why we live lives of integrity. We live lives of integrity to honor God, to please God. And if there's one takeaway I want you to take from this whole thing, it's this. If you're going to have integrity, it is going to cost you. But if you're going to lack integrity, it's going to cost you more. You and I both know that if you're going to live a life of integrity, if you're going to try to do the right thing, it's going to cost you. But if you're going to live with a lack of integrity, it's going to cost you more. I remember about a year ago, I was playing golf with my friend named Andrew Wood. And Andrew is a great question asker. And he's such a learner. He just wants to grow. And I love that about him. And he asked me a very insightful and thoughtful question. He said, hey, Joel, he's heard me talk about my dad and how I really like my dad. I look up to my dad. He said, hey, Joel, what is astonishing about your dad? And I thought, man, that's kind of a heavy question. I didn't want to just answer it quickly because he had put a lot of thought into asking the question. And so, and before I even tell you what I said, let me just tell you, like, my dad is great, but he is not perfect. And he would be the first person to tell you that. But when I thought about this, what is astonishing about my dad? Two things came to my mind. The first is my dad has lived 60 years and he's done it with so much integrity. He lives his life wanting to do the right thing. He messes up for sure. He's not perfect, but when he sees an area of his life that is off course or not how God wants him to live, he quickly changes course as soon as he becomes aware of a way that he could honor God even more. This idea of, like, it's never wrong to do the right thing, this has been a core belief of my dad. It's been annoying growing up with my dad because he always just does the right thing. The second thing that's astonishing about my dad, I've watched him for 30 years, I've never seen someone in all of my life experience and live underneath the favor of God like my dad. I can't tell you how many times my dad has told me, "Joel, I just want to live my life and I want to be in a blessable position." Kind of this idea that if God is up there and he's watching us live our lives and he's looking, I'm not sure if it works this way, but if he's looking to dish out favor and blessings on those that love and follow him, my dad just goes like, "I want to be in that position where God knows that I love him and want to follow him and want to obey him." And I've just seen my dad get break after break after break after break. Just things just go his way. The favor of God and the favor of man has been all over his life. I've watched, it almost seems like every week there's a story where you go, "That's unexplainable. That doesn't happen to other people." And the only way I know how to describe it is it's the favor of God. And so as I'm explaining this to Andrew, I say he lives a life of integrity and he has experienced the favor of God and the favor of man. As I'm sharing this with Andrew, I thought to myself, and we agreed, those two things are not unrelated. That is not one random fact about my dad and another random fact about my dad. Those things are because of one another. Because 2 Chronicles 16:9 says this, that the eyes of the Lord, listen to this, the eyes of the Lord, they range throughout the whole earth, seeking to strengthen the hearts of those who are fully committed to God. This means that God is literally looking around, looking at all of our lives and going, whose heart is fully committed to me? Who's all in? Who's not cutting corners? Who's not trying to sneak by? Who's not trying to be half in, half out? Who's all in? I want to strengthen that person's heart. And I was looking at that word strengthen, and synonyms for it are sustain, provide for, provide security for, give favor to. God is looking to strengthen and give favor to the people whose hearts are fully surrendered to him. So you live this life of integrity where you go, "God, I'm not doing this for other people. I'm doing this for you. I want to do the right thing." God sees this and goes, "I want to strengthen and put my favor on your life." David writes in 1 Chronicles, he writes that the Lord tests our hearts and he is pleased with integrity. God sees the middle. He sees the core. He sees who we are behind closed doors. And he tests that and he's pleased with integrity. Now just watch my dad live this life. I just go, man, that's a life that pleases God in the area of integrity. And I've just seen the favor of God poured onto his life. And so what I'm saying is that yes, having integrity is going to cost you, but living a life without integrity is going to cost you more. It's going to cost you the favor of God on your life. It's going to cost you the favor of God in your life. And this isn't some kind of contract between you and God. Like if you serve him, he'll give you blessing. It just doesn't work exactly like that. What I'm not saying is that, you know, let's say you want to make some renovations on your home. And you go, man, this is something that probably requires me to pull a permit, $150 to City Hall type permit. And you're like, nobody's going to know. Like, nobody's going to come knock on the door and check and see if you made an adjustment to your home, right? But being a person that wants to do the right thing, you go to City Hall, you apply, and you go, "I'm just doing this little swing, but I'd like to apply for this permit." What I'm not saying is that if you do the right thing, that the City Hall employee all of a sudden is going to go, "Wow, what incredible integrity. Here's a free permit for you." That's not what I'm saying. Chances are you're going to have to pony up some Benjamins to make that thing happen, right? Like, that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is this, that if you live a life of integrity, of full surrender, of "God, if there's a way in my life that just doesn't line up with you, if I'm doing the wrong thing and I switch it, then over the course of your life, if you get to the end, I believe that you will look back on your life and you go, "Wow, time and time and time again, I felt strengthened, I felt sustained, I felt provided for, and I felt the favor of God on my life." That is the price that you pay. You lose out on that. You lose out on that if you live a life that's not fully surrendered to the Lord. It's not fully surrendered to the Lord. Now I should tell you this too, kind of as I wrap up, I should tell you this. If you choose to have integrity in your life, people aren't going to clap for you. They're not going to be impressed with you. Do you think that if you kind of leave this and you go, I want to do the right thing. I want to be a kind of person who has integrity in all matters, big and small. You go to the person that you kind of have this, you know, deal with, where like you pay half of Netflix and I pay half of Netflix, and you go to them and you go, hey, I just don't feel right about that. It's just not the right thing to do. You think that person's going to think you're awesome? They're going to be mad at you for getting out of the deal. Having integrity, no one's going to clap for you, but God is going to strengthen you. And I think if you, which one of those do you want? Which one of those do you want? The thing about integrity, it's in the definition. It's what you do when no one is watching. It's what you do when no one is watching. And so we don't live lives of integrity to be applauded by men. We don't live lives of integrity so that people will think that we're something. People will think, wow, what a great person that really follows God. That's not why you have integrity. You have integrity because you want to honor and please God. That's it. And the favor of God will be on your head. This week, I got to interview somebody named Marvin Daniels. He's the director of the Hope Center in Kansas City. He is a man of integrity. He is an old, wise, godly man. He's married. They have 5 grown children. I got to talk to him for about 25 minutes about integrity. It is so good. Let me show you a 1-minute clip right now so you can see what part 2 is all about.
When you recognize you live in a fallen, fallible, finite world, in which oftentimes believers and individuals alone just simply say, look, I'm not perfect. Well, sometimes we think we're not perfect in mind and in the things that we say, but then we do things that will protect perfection in us that doesn't exist. Yeah. And so I would like to encourage individuals to understand that, listen, if you desire to live a transparent life, and that's what I've decided that I would do, that's what protects me in integrity, is that I decide I'm going to live a transparent life where no skeletons in my closet unless somebody put them in there. I decided I would live a transparent life because it sets me free from having to try to be impressive to someone. That's where we find ourselves putting our integrity in the chopping blocks. Either we want to impress somebody, we want to look like somebody else, we want to create a facade that allows people to see us a certain way. You know, when it comes to the issue of transparency, we recognize that not only do I not have it all together, but everybody else that I live among don't have it all together. That's just reality.
I hope that just kind of gave you a taste of what to expect in part 2, and I hope you'll watch it or listen to it wherever you're watching or listening to this one. Let me close my message this week with a few questions. For those of you that have been journaling along with us, let's keep going. For those of you that are just tuning in now or you don't have a journal yet, it's not too late to start. It's so good to journal. It's a great practice. It helps you remember and see on paper what God is doing in your life. I've got 2 questions for you today. The first question is this: what areas of your life lack integrity? I didn't say, are there any areas of your life that lack integrity? I said, what areas of your life lack integrity? Because I've never met a person who can't answer that question and go, this is a thing in my life that lacks integrity. We're all off a little bit somewhere. So think about that. Spend a few minutes thinking about that. What areas of your life lack integrity? Is there a way in which you could do the right thing that would be different than what you're currently doing? The second question is this: what's God prompting you to do right now? What's God prompting you to do? If you hesitate on that, you're going to lose. Like if you go, feel like he's prompting me to do this or that, but I'm going to wait until tomorrow to decide, I don't think you're going to do it. I think you're going to miss out on being obedient to God, and I think you're going to miss out on the favor of God on your life in this way. I think we have this chance right now to respond quickly to what God is asking us to do. So when you answered the first question, what areas of your life lack integrity, the second question probably ties to that. What's God prompting you to do? And I think, oh man, I think there's a chance that somebody is listening or watching right now and you're going, Joel, this just isn't that big of a deal. And I just think God disagrees. If I read the Bible, I just think God disagrees. And I'm not trying to scare you. What I'm trying to say, James chapter 4 says that if you know the right thing to do and you don't do it, that is sin. And sin is what put Jesus on the cross. So I don't think Jesus is going, oh, you know, it's not a big deal. I think he's going, this is a big deal. This is a way in which you can give all of yourself to me. Like if you call yourself a Christ follower, to know a way in which you should act or change to not do it, that's a sin. It's sin. I think the best time to make a move is right now. It's not to wait till tomorrow or Wednesday or whatever. It's to do it right now. If you want to read a little bit more in your Bible about integrity and maybe to see a little bit more about how God feels about integrity, I would go to Acts chapter 5 and I would read verses 1 through 11. It's a story of Ananias and Sapphira. And again, I'm not trying to scare you, but I am trying to say to you, God's not taking this lightly, and neither should we. And I would encourage you to read that story, read it a couple times, it's only 11 verses, and really think about just how serious God views a fully surrendered heart versus a heart that's trying to cut corners and get by and be deceptive in this way or that way. Let me close with this. Final thought, give you something to chew on. Can we just start here? You're not perfect and I'm not perfect. And no matter how hard we try, and no matter how hard we respond to this, you're not going to ace it, and I'm not going to ace it. And that is why I love Jesus so much. That is why I love being a Christian so much, is because when you are a Christian, Jesus does not have a grade card up in heaven watching your every move and giving you a score and going, oh man, one day he'll be perfect. And if he just would change that, he's going to be an A-plus Christian. That isn't how Jesus views us. He's not looking at us day to day and giving us a score on holiness. What Jesus does, he looks down on us and he goes, man, if just today, if they would just have a surrendered heart today, that would show me that they love me. If they would just respond in little ways, as I'm prompting them, if they would actually make decisions to move closer to me, that would just honor me so much. These are the thoughts of Jesus in heaven. He's not hoping that we can become perfect because he knows that we never will be. He just wants to see a surrendered heart that loves him, and we're able to prove that by doing the right thing. It's never wrong to do the right thing. Three Creeks, I love you, and we'll see you soon.
Thanks for listening. We trust this message has made a difference in your life by the power of God. Remember, this was just part one. Find part two, an interview with someone who has followed God for a long time, wherever podcasts are found, on YouTube or Facebook. To find out more about our church, see what we're up to this summer, or to give online, visit 3creekschurch.com.